marathon.
What time were you on?
I was on at 10:20 a.m. yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was really fun. I did part of it with the clerk. I was like coming in as he was finishing up. And then the next part with Paul Hooper.
Oh, really, I love both those guys.
Yeah.
It's funny, whenever I go to Asheville, North Carolina, and where I'm staying at the producer's place is our pictures of Paul.
We talked about pornography and sex work a lot.
I'm like, at 10 a.m.
I'm like, why is this our section?
Yeah,
that
what
was weird. Yeah.
Did you guys had a lot of opinions on that?
No, I mean, it just came up. So like, Paul was telling stories from his past and like, and then he started getting into that. And then me and the clerk were just, I don't know why this the incest porn came up and we were just getting into that. It was fun. Also, they were really loopy at that time. They've been like, that was like the last 3 hours of the marathon.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. They had no filter and they don't normally have a filter anyway. So it's like, that would be fun.
Well, here we're starting this off like it's a Marin podcast, and we're just in the middle of a conversation. I pressed record. This is Gabe Pacheco here. Welcome to Eat, Pray, Judge. You already know that if you're listening. And today, my trusty co-host, the one and only Sammy Hamarni, is not able to be here for work reasons. Ugh, bummer. But in seat number two as my guest co-host, we've got the wonderful returning Amber Rollo.
Hey, how's it going? Happy to be here.
And today on mic number three, one of my dear friends in stand-up comedy, the one, the only, Khalid Rahman.
Mic three, what's up?
Very.
House. Mic three.
Mic two.
Yeah, it's been. This has been an episode, a long time coming,
yeah.
And I'm so excited to have you here for a pivotal year, 1985.
Oh, huge!
And a pivotal movie. The Breakfast Club.
Oh,
one of my favorites.
Mine too. Yeah. Oh my God.
Which I got to be honest, I didn't see it when it came out or even for a while until I was like an older teen, maybe even in my early 20s, because I thought the movie was about breakfast.
Well, I definitely did not see it when it came out because I was not born yet. But I did see it when I was like 10 years old in my sister's house. She had a VHS of it, my older sister Gina, and we had slept over at her house and she was sleeping in really late because she was, you know, a partier. And we put it in. I watched it one time and I was obsessed, and I watched it five more times in a row. It's one of my favorite movies.
I would watch it. It was on Channel 11 here in New York when I was a kid all the time. It seemed like every Saturday it was just on. And I was like one of those TV kids, like one of those like indoor kids.
Yeah. Oh, I'm very familiar with the indoor kid lifestyle. I'm a Zyrtec baby. You know, I'm an Advair baby. I'm a Flonase baby.
You got a few allergies.
Yeah, can't really deal with the ragweeds. Can't deal with the tree pollens. So.
Don't like to be outside amongst those things. It might kill me.
Yeah,
I got a few questions at restaurants.
I love a nice air-conditioned room, and I love a cable box.
I love eating with you at a restaurant because it gives me freedom to ask more questions. Like, usually I'm like, I'll just take what I get. But you're like, excuse me.
Yeah.
I've got several questions about what's in this, and I'm like, let me ask some questions too.
Totally.
That's a great take on it. Right? But I'm with him. I'm like, I can't ask any questions. He took up all the questions.
He took a lot of questions.
Now I can't have any questions. I should just be happy with whatever.
I like the idea.
Or actually, sometimes I ask questions on his behalf because I get...
I like that too. I like that. I'm like, I have a guardian angel that's very concerned about my well-being. But don't worry, everybody. I can eat gluten. So
nice. See, there you go.
Yeah. So I'm not
focus
like
on
a.
What you can.
But yeah, I was an indoor kid. I would just be. I watched my stories. I was like an old lady just watching my stories every night. I had 4 hours of stories to watch, 8 p.m. to 12 a.m. And then on the weekends, I'd watch a lot of stories too. And the big thing was Channel 11, WPIX, always played these like kind of like cult classic movies. So I guess probably from the time I was like 11, I would like watch like Breakfast Club would be on a lot. I'd watch March of the Wooden Soldiers for some reason was on a ton. Just one of these weird holiday movies. It was kind of dark. Wizard of Oz was on a lot, so I'd watch those, and Breakfast Club was my favorite because it was like, I was probably like 11 or so, and I thought, like, this is what it's like to be a teenager. There's the dorks and the jocks, and I'm clearly one of the dorks, but I'm one of the cool ones, so I can be friends with these people. So
I was the freak.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like,
but
yes.
It made me feel like kind of less alone
yeah.
in this, like, period of transitioning towards – especially when I got older, because I watched it throughout like my like teenage years also. So like going from like when I was 13, getting into high school, I'm like, oh, I can handle, I can be one of these people who can deal with this kind of weird situation.
Yeah, yeah. So that's interesting that you saw it because you were watching a TV. We had Channel 50 in DC, and yep. I would watch Death Wish. Mm-hmm. That was one of the movies that was on all the time. Another one that was on all the time was The Warriors.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think that because I'm a VHS boy too. I was walking around the video stores, and Breakfast Club wasn't so much on TV for me, but I do remember the package, and it just seemed too dramatic for me. I think at that moment in my, like when I was little, I was looking for movies that had the like a Conan the Barbarian on the cover, or like the Creepshow skeleton.
It's so funny. I never looked so young. I always want to be like, so VHS was this thing from back in the
ancient times. We use VHS. Yeah. I'm not that young.
Amber's like a BitTorrent kid.
You look very, very young. You look so young.
Well, yeah. Thank you very much. There's That's really important in our thing. Industry. Yeah.
Right, right. Well, you know, so let's date ourselves a little bit. We're going back to 1985 for this film. And this was, what a time, okay? Mm-hmm. If you were a toddler or, you know, a first, second grader, maybe you just had a room full of Cabbage Patch Kids. You were watching Care Bears, which was a really sensitive show about feelings. Mm-hmm. You know, a cartoon about feelings, which is pretty interesting.
Care Bears is great. Cabbage Patch was a huge thing in, like, my house growing up. 85 Cabbage Patch. I had a friend who collected them. This is like a big time for collecting toys.
Yes,
it's like one day these gonna be worth money and we're gonna be rich. So you would collect like Cabbage Patch, G.I. Joe. So that I had a friend who had all these things and he had like the original boxes and he's like, one day I'm gonna sell these things. And you know what? eBay had not come yet. But one, he probably is killing it right now.
Yeah, those actually are worth money. The Cabbage Patch and the G.I. Joe, if he kept them pristine. The Beanie Babies, not so much. No.
That was my aunt's
those
like,
were trash.
Get rich quick scheme. She's like, I got all these Beanie Babies. I'm like, good luck with that. Did not work out. But yeah, it was a big collector's time.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of G.I. Joe's. And there's the great show on Netflix now, which is The Toys That Made Us.
Oh, it's a great show.
And you can see now that there's a kind of a time limit to, or like a shelf life for how long a toy like G.I. Joe can be popular. Because when they first come out, all of the main characters are put out as a toy.
Yeah.
But then the next year, they don't continue to put out that character. They have to create spin-off characters, but those characters aren't as popular. So if you're like maybe 3 years later in the cycle and you want to go and get those first toys, they're impossible to find because all the collectors have hoarded them and they don't do like a recasting.
It was a big like toy collecting time and posters.
Remember
posters back before Instagram? People had posters on their walls.
Well, yeah, man. You'd have to have it
before YouTube.
You have a Trapper Keeper with a Lamborghini on it, and you've got an Iron Maiden blacklight poster in your room. You don't even listen to Iron Maiden.
Trapper Keeper was a brand.
I know what a Trapper Keeper is.
Yeah.
I did not have posters, though. Although my door was covered in stickers. That's what my parents hated it so much.
I was getting really into comic strips. You know, and the trad comic strips, the OG ones are obviously Snoopy or Charlie Brown. But this was the year, 1985, where we saw the emergence of the Calvin and Hobbes empire.
Calvin and Hobbes.
Right? Sick.
The big famous one is just like Calvin back turned peeing on something.
Yeah.
Like the big one.
People put that on mud flaps. You'll get a sticker of that, put it on your car. Mm-hmm. He's a bad boy. He was like Dennis the Menace 2.0.
New York Newsday, every day, Calvin and Hobbes. It would be Garfield, all the old school ones.
Yeah, I wonder where Bill Watterson is now. You know, he probably has his own private island. Just
rolling in dough.
Yeah, cashing in all of those Calvin and Hobbes royalties.
Just doing coke off somebody.
Yeah.
Somebody. It's a family show.
Did you ever get into that comic strip or any others?
No, I liked Calvin and Hobbes. We had the book of Calvin and Hobbes later on of like all of the comics. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking about the collectibles. It was, you know, you were talking about how they were only popular for a short period of time. The ones that broke that were My Little Pony, because they first came out with the toy. And then they like came out with a TV series, but because they weren't used to making TV series for girls yet, they made it sort of like dark and like they had like that Skeletor type like character in it, and girls were not into it.
And eventually they got to Gem.
Yeah, and then they like finally got to it. Yeah. Like years later, and then they had a resurgence of the toys and a new they came up with like the little butt imprint thing that My Little Ponies have. That's what I was thinking of when you were talking about Calvin and Hobbes.
I need to see that. I need to see these early moody emo My Little Ponies.
Well, then I mean, 85 is also a huge time to be a Republican.
Oh yeah,
great time to be a Republican.
Oh, this was peak. Mr. Reagan, Reaganomics. Oh,
yeah. Morning in America.
That's right, mm-hmm. Yeah. And this was the emergence of the yuppies.
Yeah.
And the family values, the religious right.
Religious right.
All sorts of panics around childhood. And conspicuous consumption was big. Mm-hmm. This was also the year that Mikhail Gorbachev became the head of the Soviet Union.
Ah, so, and then they start to have the softening of tensions.
That's right. He was the wokest of the old school Soviet leaders.
He's like, I'm Soviet, but I'm cool.
Yeah.
Baby, I'm cool.
Yeah, let's warm it up, guys.
In 1985, were kids like latchkey kids, mm-hmm. or were they like, were parents still watching their kids?
Kids were latchkey kids, but this is also, the 80s was also a big time of paranoia and like fear of strangers.
Oh.
It's like
stranger danger
is like towards the end of the 80s and into the early 90s. It was like all the media just pumped up all these fears about crime, and crime rates were actually going down, but the coverage of crime was going up. So
because they realized,
like,
the money they had in the advertising, yes,
because people were like, oh, you know, there's a lot of money in fear. So they had pumped up the fear of all these like stories. So you hear, that's when you started hearing stuff about like razor blades in like candied apples.
Oh yeah.
So you couldn't get any like Halloween candy that wasn't like wrapped anymore.
They had to inspect. My parents had to inspect our Halloween candy every year before we ate it.
It's interesting you're bringing this up because this is the time. There are reasons for this. It is because there were more two-income households happening. So more women were going into the workplace.
What?
And as that's happening,
I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, second wave feminism.
You do this 80s podcast, you start getting all Republican.
Yeah,
my mom was the breadwinner in our household. I'm just saying, my dad had hobbies, not jobs, and we were at home alone all
passions.
The time. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Quote unquote.
And think about what that's doing. Women are making more money. Some of them are the breadwinners in the household. So that's creating this uncertainty around what the traditional family is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Hence the family values reaction. But also these two parents out of the house working means that there's this magic hour, this time that I love, that we talked about a little bit with the movie 13 when you were a guest.
Yes.
That magic hour between like 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. where kids are just left to run wild in the streets.
Amok.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just eating all the gushers that they want, you know, playing skip it recklessly in the street without checking to see if the lights turned red or green.
I love that because you have the allergies and like a long history of this, these struggles. You're like, they were eating whatever they wanted. That was the wildest thing we could think of. They
the
were like
marshmallows from Lucky Charms. Hell
honey.
Yeah.
Right, right. Well, it's the thing is, like we were saying, there isn't really that much crime. Not that much stuff is really happening. But parents were worried that their kids were listening to records backwards and becoming converted to Satanism, or that somebody was going to molest them and put them on a milk carton. In that order.
The Stranger Danger thing really was a huge thing. We've never recovered from it.
Yeah. And there were, and this is the peak of the after school special. And if you watch.
A very special episode also was big. Every show. Remember when Different Strokes? when Homeboy got like kidnapped and maybe molested?
That's right.
That was crazy. This is a comedy.
Yeah.
Comedies would just randomly have a serious episode where someone got molested. I'm like, this is...
They loved it.
What would you consider Breakfast Club? Would you consider it a drama? Because it was dramatic at times.
One of the first great dramedies.
Yeah, it's a
dramedy.
There's
a lot of dramatic parts, but I think it's mostly funny. And it's mostly funny,
but then like when they get into family conversations, the dramatic music comes up and like they're acting out their parents. It's
like suicide talk. I mean, it's rough.
It's intense. Mm-hmm.
So let's jump into The Breakfast Club, which you're absolutely right about. This has that a very special episode of your favorite comedy vibe to it.
Yep. Yes.
You know? And this movie, Breakfast Club, was written and directed by John Hughes. Mm. And he wrote it over a couple days, which always blows my mind. And it makes me want to kick myself for my writer's block and
He's
procrastination.
Just brilliant. I mean, so many hits. This guy had 16 Candles. He had Macaulay Culkin.
He did. Home Alone.
I watched this whole documentary about Home Alone on Netflix, a new one. It's fantastic.
Yeah, the movies that made us.
He wrote that one like a weekend. He was just prolific.
Yeah. Sure. And he put suburban Chicago on the map for youth culture. So John Hughes wrote and directed this, and he, Molly Ringwald is his muse, mm-hmm. and he had her in a lot of these early coming of age movies. Wow. And for being a older baby boomer white guy, he really is good at getting into the minds of kids.
Do you know how he found Molly Ringwald?
No.
Was he trolling like through a Hot Topic or something?
Because she was like 16 in this movie.
She was. So what happened was she had just moved to L.A. to pursue acting, and she signed with ICM. She like through a series of happenstance. And he was looking to write a movie about like a high school like situation with like this whole situation happened in the movie with like tension. So he asked ICM to send over a bunch of headshots of actresses in that age range who might work for this. And he just loved her picture. So he wrote the movie with her picture up on the wall on like a corkboard. Wow. And just thought of this character, Claire, as Molly Ringwald. So when they started auditioning people, he was like, well, obviously we have to see this girl. And then he just saw her and like a couple of people and was like, I got it. This is the person.
That's very cool and a little creepy.
A little creepy.
That's a little creepy.
Well, he met with her. He said, I think she didn't really read for it. He kind of just met with her and he was like, I got a good sense of her.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. And she actually wanted to play the other character in this. She wanted to play the character Ally Sheedy. Yeah.
Mm. She wanted to play the freak. Character. The freak is the more fun character to play. That's the one when I watched, I was like, yes.
I rewatched it half last night, half this morning, and I forgot how weird that character was. For the first like half of the movie, she just goes, she's like just straight up making sounds. She's just making sounds. She's that kid you're not allowed to play with. Like, stay away from that girl.
I remember watching this when I was a kid, and like her character was the one I identified with because mm-hmm. I was like, okay, she's making the right move. She's not even in the hierarchy at all. She's not a dork. She's not a jock. She's not a popular kid. She's like just off in this other realm. Right. And I was like, that's smart. That's what you should do.
It's also funny that this was like the beginning of this move. That movies started to do like quite a bit, which was take a girl who was obviously gorgeous and like make her quote unquote ugly by like just doing something weird to her hair or having her wear glasses. And I'm like, I can still see this is a hot woman. I'm not an idiot, Hollywood.
Yeah. I call that the Clark Kent.
Yes. Yes.
Where you're like, how come nobody in Metropolis understands that this guy's Superman? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you could tell. You could tell. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which magnify the eyes.
I mean, I don't know. Sometimes people reintroduce themselves to me when I'm wearing my glasses. So I think.
That's a thing that does happen.
It does happen. Mm-hmm. You guys probably have experienced
But no
that.
One's going to be like, oh, no. Who is this Butterface?
Yeah.
No. Oh, no. Glasses? Oh, no. What? She hot now. I want to hit with that. No one ever does that. No. You know?
No. Most people are like looking at the body. The face is the last thing you look at. Problematic take.
It's crazy. What? It's so what? Crazy, man.
What? What?
So, you know what?
Sorry, just go. What?
It was the 80s. It was a different time.
It
was a time we objectified women. That's how it was. You know, the good time.
Very, you know, I don't know how anybody could be
revealing myself. My true self.
You guys in the 80s.
Haven't you watched any?
In my mind.
Any music video from the 80s is some guy wearing those Risky Business sunglasses, like putting them down as a hot woman in a red dress walks by.
You do this.
Oh, God. That's the perviest version of that by far.
Like every video has like a hard hat wearing dude.
You guys
like
gotta
wolf
get video
whistling
just to see Amber go like a real pervert.
We'll put a boomerang
that's
up.
Like old school like Revenge of the Nerds pervert stuff right there.
Yeah, man. Yo, everybody was a perv. Exactly. Like the nerds were pervs.
They were the worst. They were like criminals. I mean, straight up. They're just like spying on women. Yeah. They're like switching dudes. Like this is illegal.
Very inappropriate.
It was very much of its time.
Yes, exactly.
Not in a good way. Not in a good way.
We've grown, we've evolved, we've changed. That's right.
I wonder how many times people have I'm older and I'll sometimes will date a woman who's like, even if she's 10 years younger, to me, that's not a 30-year-old woman. No big deal. But that's a pretty big gap in terms of, like, you know, cultural mores and stuff. So I wonder how many times I've watched a film like this with one of these people, with a woman that age, and been like, it was a different time. Things were different. Right. I learned not to watch stuff like Eddie Murphy stuff.
Right.
And they're like, what is this? I'm like, right. It was a different time.
Yeah, I was thinking about watching Golden Child yesterday, and then I was like, I don't know. Who knows? I remember it as a kid.
With
and I was
me?
Like, yeah. And
you think
I was
you're
like,
watching with me?
Yeah.
He's like, no, with this other girl I've been seeing. No big deal.
My other family.
Also,
my other family.
Who also lives in Greenpoint.
You could have a single family back then.
Actually, I talk about his
other
family. You can't
do that
family. Now. Oh, no, you can't. Yeah.
Yeah, you get caught. Instagram.
That's right.
Back then, you just take off.
No, that feels like
oh, that's a different type of Instagram. Second family.
Second family Instagram.
Yeah, a lot of older comics have that joke. You can't cheat anymore because we got phones.
People got surveillance.
Yeah, man. Well, totally. I mean, I remember hanging out with some of your family, and they had all of their kids on GPS.
Wow.
Just tracking them all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I just was hanging out with my little sister at her bachelorette party last weekend, and she has diabetes, and sometimes she goes low. And there was a point where, like, I couldn't find her, and it freaked me out. And so then I put her tracking on my phone. So now I know where she is. And that's kind of...
I wonder what the positive negative of that
is. Yeah.
Because, like, you have to get some freedom to have freedom to make some mistakes.
Yes.
Right? And you're a lot less likely to make mistakes if you're being tracked. Right? So how do you get to, like, make those mistakes and then kind of that form you as a person?
You need unaccountable time.
Yeah.
To learn. To fall down.
You know what it's going to lead to? Luddites. just 16-year-old kids who are like, I hate technology. I'm not doing it.
I can't wait.
What did they do? Even in 13, there was tracking on the phones. And what they did was they told the mom that they were going to the library. They left their backpacks with their phones in it at the library. Boom.
Kids find a way.
Yeah. You can always find a way.
Yeah. Life finds a way.
Life finds a way.
Yeah. So, okay.
Who else was in it?
Well, we had
Brat Pack. This was like the first official Brat Pack hit movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
had Judd Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
Who's 25 in this movie. So
insane.
We can start there.
By the way, did you notice he has a shock of gray hair
in
the front of his head?
Yes.
I was like, is this
how did you cast a 16-year-old with a shock of gray hair? Why didn't you just
I guess they just assumed they're like people will assume this is like a punk thing, he dyed it, but I'm like, no, that's gray hair clearly.
No,
like,
rebels have that though, that you get that from being wise. That's the Tulsi Gabbard streak, you know, another troublemaker.
It was also one of those things where back in the day, they just didn't pay attention to a lot of details in movies. Like you'll notice a lot of continuity errors in movies and like there'll be a boom mic randomly in scenes. So it's like the casting person has been like, you know what? This guy's a great actor. He's got a great face. Who cares about his hair? What's going on there? No big deal.
I think the movie was very theatrical. And like, so if this was on stage in live theater, you would just be like, okay, the audience can suspend belief.
This easily could have been a play.
Yeah, exactly.
It was only like four sets inside the high school.
It was almost like the Jean-Paul Sartre's No Exit.
Yeah.
Like, it's like instead of hell being other people, this is hell being other people in high school, you know? Or it also made me think about Reservoir Dogs, which I love. And that all takes place in a garage. And so this is like the high school Reservoir Dogs without all the murder. But, you know, everybody, it's all dialogue and people stuck in one place together.
But all these actors went on to become like pretty big stars in
Emilio
that era.
Estevez.
Sure. And he is, one of the first movies I saw him in was Repo Man. So, which came out in 1984. And then this is 1985, him playing like still playing kind of the opposite. Like in Repo Man, he's like a disaffected punk rock kid. And in this, like more like the Judd Nelson character.
The earring makes all the difference. it's that earring.
It was always weird to me that Judd Nelson didn't become bigger.
Yeah, me too.
I always thought like this guy, like, this is the kind of role that like is like a career maker.
I think I watched an interview with him afterwards, and he was so serious about acting. And I wonder if that actually was a liability, because I think that we like our celebrities to kind of be dumb and just like kind of be like like vibing all the time, like making peace signs or whatever, and talking about how great their life is. Mm-hmm. Whereas he was just like, you know, it's about the work. And I don't want to do another role like this. Yeah. Like, I'm looking to challenge myself.
I bet after this, he got inundated with just like rebel, punk, the bad boy. And he was like, I'm an actor.
Right,
I did Shakespeare. Right. That was like, that's like the end of commerce. Like once you start talking like that, agents are like, well, this guy doesn't want to make us any money. You
know? Well, he also did, we covered this movie before, but he did St. Elmo's Fire the next year where he plays a recent college graduate. So within the same year, he's doing high school and college grad. And as the college grad, it's against type for this because he plays a emerging Republican yuppie. You know, so that was him like trying to go against type.
The opposite.
You know, Judd Nelson could have played Emilio Estevez's character in Repo Man.
Yes.
Easily.
Yeah. My favorite, Judd Nelson is in two things that I loved. In the 80s, he was in Transformers, the movie, as the voice of Rodimus Prime.
Wow.
And he's in New Jack City.
Yes,
as the undercover cop
is in New Jack City,
who partners with Ice-T to fight against the
movie
crack
too.
Dealers.
That's a classic.
Yeah, we can't. Well, but
that's part two.
Yeah, that's part two. We'll have you back for New Jack City.
like one of the best ever.
But
cult classics. Yeah.
But we got old Judd. He's old enough to drink when this movie came out. We got old Emilio. They're friends in real life.
Yep.
During shooting, they're going to Chicago. They're drinking, they're carousing,
Cheering
they're having
up.
A good time.
They were the OG Pussy Posse.
That's right, they were. And it was them, and they would hang out with Rob Lowe all the time and these other Brat Pack guys.
What a much better name, the Brat Pack.
Yeah.
Because Pussy Posse doesn't, it's just like, what is that?
Yuck. Yeah.
Yeah, is that Michael Douglas's
thing?
That's
Leonardo DiCaprio. Who else was in his crew?
The guy who was in the first Spider-Man.
Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
And randomly... the third guy is just wasn't doing that well. I'm forgetting
Philip
the third guy's
Seymour
name.
Hoffman.
Philip Seymour Hoffman. Just like Ben Stiller. I remember it later. But this young crew of actors who just like ran around Hollywood amok.
Around the time of Titanic, like mid-90s.
Cool. Yes.
Yeah, you saw my face change when you said the term.
Lucas Haas.
I was like, oh.
Lucas Haas. That's who the third guy was.
Sure.
Kind of had a weird career.
But your boy Leonardo DiCaprio, still dating ladies the same age.
See, he's still out there.
Yeah.
He's still out here. Yeah. He's
still
50,
swinging
he's
for the
50
fences.
He's going on 30.
Yeah. So, but the Brat Pack, whether or not that really existed as a unit, mm-hmm. Some people think it was just made up by like the Hollywood Reporter. There
Great
was an article.
Yeah.
It actually, reading about it though, it said that it kind of like killed some of their career, killed their careers or made overexpose them because the article shows them as sort of being like carousing lads who are blowing off lesser known actors and like just wandering around Hollywood like bored. Like,
well, some of them had serious substance abuse problems.
Sure.
Like Kiefer Sutherland was just, he was just drunk from like 1982 to like 1997. Like, so it was a problem.
Yeah. The 80s, man. What a wild time.
Well, Emilio's brother fell
Charlie
into that
Sheen.
Job.
Oh, man. That
yeah.
guy's a legend. I'm like, that guy's my hero.
But of all...
What's the opposite of a legend? He is a...
Yeah.
Definitely one of the most memorable characters of his time, though.
Oh,
because he had so many different lives, Charlie Sheen. He was like this. He was, you know, and also just Hollywood royalty, the family, his brother, Emilio. And
he was in... He was also in a John Hughes movie as a major star in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Charlie Sheen is in that and hooks up with Jennifer Grey as, you know, she's... Oh, and he plays the bad boy. He's the Judd Nelson character of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah, that's right. But those guys, I don't know. A bunch of legacy boys. I'm not impressed.
They were. You know what I like about the Sheens, though? Or Emilio is my favorite Sheen. I think the one that, I don't know.
Because he kept the name Estevez.
That's right.
I just love Wild Thing. I just love Charlie Sheen. For me, just always would be a special place because of Wild Thing and Major League. He's such an epic character.
I get that, and I liked him in Platoon.
Yeah,
yeah. So we got him and
Ally Sheedy.
Ally Sheedy's in this, and
she's older.
She's older too, but she didn't hang out with them at the bars.
No.
She was doing her own thing in her own trailer.
She's just knitting, like a good person.
Yeah, and but I think you know
and
she
Anthony
also
Michael Hall.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And Anthony Michael Hall. He's also
I think he's
like 16.
The unsung hero of the movie. Like, he to me is the emotional center of the movie.
Yeah, but he says some problematic things.
I mean, the movie has quite a few problematic things. I mean, his locker is like open this and die fag. Like, yeah. That's on his locker. Yeah. This is a different time. Yeah.
It was a different time.
Oh,
it was,
that's on Anthony Michael Hall?
No, that's on Judd Nelson's
locker. Oh,
sure. He get his weed from the locker.
Yeah.
Anthony Michael Hall is, like, he pretends like he slept with Claire.
Yeah, well...
Sort of. It can be interpreted two
different
ways.
Well, he says, I didn't want her to know.
I didn't want her to know. Yeah. And that's why I was saying, I was motioning to her because I didn't want her to know.
Yeah. He was also too young to drink when this movie was made. Mm-hmm. A legit, real teenager. And he is, I'd say, the proxy for John Hughes. If John Hughes was going to write himself into a movie, I think he would have been the Anthony Michael Hall character.
Sure.
Kind of like very wholesome. Vitamin D whole milk drinking.
I didn't catch that, but that totally makes sense. I mean, he writes their story at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
Very meta.
It's pretty funny to me that Emilio Estevez is playing the jock.
Yeah.
Because it's like, he's not a big guy. You know what I mean? They could have got like a big strapping character, but I guess he was just such like a
good
actor.
He's a wrestler, though.
He's
not
a wrestler, but he didn't
wrestlers
seem like...
are little.
But he didn't seem to be even like in shape. Like, yeah. They, like, he never, like, he's in this, like, sweatshirt. You know what I mean? Like, you don't see, I don't know. It just kind of seemed to me like, I'm like, this guy wouldn't be that guy.
The moment that he did the cartwheels, though, and the leaping over the bookshelves, I was feeling that. Yeah. And I could see why Paula Abdul married him later.
Yeah.
You know? I was like, you both physically, physically fit. He could probably cut a rug on the dance floor.
Mm-hmm. I used to do Paula Abdul's workout videos with my grandma.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yep. My dad loved it.
That was a big industry for celebrities back then.
Yeah, she had this one where you had this mat that was like slippery, and you put on socks, and it was like a slide workout, and you were doing like all slide dances. And
sure. She had one with MC Scat Cat, just like, just getting down, 2 steps forward, 3 steps back.
That was a great song.
Probably.
I like when MC Scat Cat's like, and I like to smoke. I was like, wow, this cartoon cat is like totally pro cigarettes in this video that kids are clearly going to see.
It was a different time.
It was. That whole, her whole album was full of bangers and hits.
Yeah.
Cold Hearted Snake is an
one
awesome
of my favorites
song.
Still. Absolutely.
I was going to say that was my dad's favorite.
That
we would drive around
on
and,
the club?
And
come
sing
on.
Cold Hearted Snake. Yeah, on the way to the grocery store together. It was awesome.
I just wanted to really quick point out that Khalid is wearing an acid wash jean jacket right now.
I'm wearing a denim tuxedo, baby. Don't undersell my outfit.
No, I mean the pants go with it as well, but like the acid wash is very 80s. Like you're getting into character.
I got into the spirit.
Yeah, you're like a George Michaels backup dancer.
You got no acid wash?
I am so sorry. I'm just in the 90s.
You got
for
no leotard?
Sure.
You got...
It's not even right.
Yeah.
And not no neon whatsoever.
Yeah, I know. Very dark. Goth almost. Almost like a Ally Sheedy vibe going on over here.
All right.
Yeah. And I let that when she, so they all get out of their cars and we see their characters sort of painted immediately.
Yeah.
And when she exits the car, she exits from the back seat, you know, and I don't even know if both of her parents were driving. Maybe her dad was chauffeuring her.
That was like a cruel one because he just like speeds away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
he doesn't
goodbye.
Really say anything to her because he ignores her.
Yeah. And she looks
that's
a lot like Girls I Went to School With at Bard. She looks like that. My college was full of that vibe.
That's like the pre-goth. Like,
yeah.
Kind of like weirdo, but not quite. There's like, not a name for it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of like this is just like the weirdo who we have to keep an eye on.
And it's funny that people thought that she looked weird because I thought she was quite fashionable. I was like, I'm down with that look. You know?
She looked great.
Yeah. It was great.
She's killing it.
Yeah. Baggy clothes,
she
layers.
Also has, she has the, by far the weirdest. She has the weirdest behavior in the movie when they all eat lunch. That lunch is. I think about that at least like once a month.
Well, I think about what type of meat was it that she threw onto the.
It was old school salami that used to have like little pieces of olive in it.
That's what the other colors were. I was like, what is going on with that meat?
It was like this garbage salami they used to put in like just like sandwiches.
And then she poured pixie sticks on it onto pixie what sticks. You would imagine is mayonnaise on that sandwich.
And Captain Crunch.
And white bread, like Wonder Bread and Captain Crunch.
That shot where they're all looking at her is the best. Because no matter like how weird they each are, they're like, oh, this one is on a different level.
Right, right. And the movie does that a couple times where everyone does the slow turn to let you know that somebody's being real weird.
Yeah.
and it's always Ally Sheedy.
In Amsterdam, they eat bread with chocolate sprinkles on it, and that's like almost
as
weird.
It's also very strange.
Remember? Mm-hmm. We ate that in Amsterdam for breakfast.
Yeah.
It was white bread with chocolate sprinkles on it. That's like their breakfast food. It was delicious.
Yeah. It's like
not with mayonnaise, though.
Like a...
just a side note.
No mayonnaise. You know. What are they thinking?
Yeah, add a little cream to
weirdos.
It.
So her lunch was weird, obviously, but the weirdest move that she does is when she decorates her picture with her dandruff.
With her dandruff, yes.
Yes. That is the real power move.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I was impressed by the sketch.
Yeah, the very sketch was great.
Sketch.
Very good drawing. Yeah.
She's got skills.
She does. She has quite a few skills. I like that she's also a good thief and pickpocket.
Mm-hmm.
She has a great memory because she's able to memorize all of Anthony Michael Hall's information from his driver's
ID
license.
Card.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And she must have stolen his social security card too because his social security number is not on.
Yeah. So she could be a CIA agent. You know, I mean, that's stuff that you look for. You want somebody with really good memory skills like that. And she's also a great liar.
Great liar.
She can tell stories. And she's penetrative with her inquisition. You know, like when she starts pushing Emilio Estevez's buttons and figuring out what's wrong with him, she reads that he doesn't know how to make decisions for himself.
Yeah, she does that. She did that right away. She was like, he doesn't know how to make decisions for
himself.
Like
the silent, wizened weirdo.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that's what happens when you don't spend a lot of time talking to people, is you're observing everyone.
You know what's funny is I feel like as good as the main cast is, the principal and the janitor.
Oh my God.
Very underrated.
Oh my God. The janitor is
the principal
my favorite.
Has some of the greatest lines in the history of movies. I wrote this one down. This one makes me laugh every single time. He goes, I make $31,000 a year and I've got a home and I'm not going to throw it away for some pathetic punk like you.
Yes.
I'm like 31,000.
Oh, I mean,
this
guy was
balling
the 80s,
in
but
1985.
It's still...
Yeah, I was like, what's that after inflation?
Like, you got home and you make 31, like one day. How could that even happen?
Yeah. Well, he definitely doesn't have a house in the same zone as that school.
No.
Because that's a pretty affluent school. Just by the fact that Molly Ringwald's character goes there with her diamond earrings.
Mm. And her sushi.
Mm-hmm.
And her sushi.
I really liked the way that the principal pointed with the pinky and the pointer finger.
Like Polly Walnuts.
Like the horns.
The horns. The pointer. Yeah.
Mess with the bull, you get the horns.
That's right. I want a point like that always.
Yeah, the double point, two fingers is always,
double
that's
douche.
Very intense.
It's powerful.
Double douche.
Yeah, yeah. Polly Walnuts does that on The Sopranos all the time.
Yes.
A.T. I love it. He also wears a leisure suit, mm-hmm. and it makes me feel like he's chasing his youth a little bit. He thinks he's cooler than he is. You know, he's one of those guys that sort of he's a little power drunk on in the small kingdom that he owns, which is
the
library.
Down a peg.
Yes.
Like at the beginning when he's trying to keep the door open and he's like, the door is way too heavy. He's like, all right, shut up. And then slam shut. Like they make him out to be the fool again and again. He spills his coffee everywhere. I'm like, this guy is just an idiot.
Yeah. And he's a bad role model too. Like he's bad to around kids, because when he enrolls kids to help him, like he asks Emilio to help him put all that stuff,
and then he blames him.
He's like, get out of here! What are you doing?
He's like, what are you doing? Get that out of here! When he realizes it's a fire hazard, yeah, that I took note of that. I was like, that's a bad principle.
What a bad boss! You know, you don't want to sell out your underlings. Yeah. You gotta keep win the love and support and admiration of your troops.
Yeah, no wonder he's alone.
This movie is still of its time because like it's only like an hour and like 38 minutes long. But they jump so quickly from like the main characters being one way to them kind of being a unit that it's almost like this is too fast, but that's just how they did it. Like they didn't do like these 2 hour plus movies back then. They're like, these are teen movies, these kids have no time, they have no sense of like time, we gotta make sure this is really fast. So they just jam everything really quickly, because right away they kind of have this bond because they all lie about what happened to the door. And that's like in the first like 15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
So at first they're like adversaries, and right away they're kind of like on the same side doing schemes together.
Yeah.
Kind of like
strange. Yeah. I took note of that too. I was like, nobody snitched. Nobody. Yeah. Everybody was just like, oh.
Yeah, it's the unwritten code of the streets in high school.
The code of the suburbs.
Yeah.
Code of the cul-de-sac. Code of the cul-de-sac.
Well, I think a lot of their emotional outbursts make me think of just that it's hormones, and they're not fully formed people yet. Mm-hmm. So when they attack each other, they don't really take it personally. And that is a conceit of how it's written. It's like this roller coaster of emotions where they go from bonding and laughing to somebody having an outburst and confronting someone else. But it's really not about that person. It's about themselves. And then after they calm down, they don't even process it. They just calm down and like switch into a completely different state of being, like happiness or.
What was so wild for me is like I saw it almost exclusively on like regular TV.
Yeah.
So for like the first, I don't know, 15 times I saw it, I did not see most of the smoking weed scene.
Right.
Because they just couldn't show it on TV. And then finally I saw it like on cable or something, and I'm like, oh, that's what they were doing.
You're like, that's why they're all giggly.
I gotta see the aftermath of the smoking weed scene. I'm like,
I get it now.
Weed is the best time in high school to bond. That's like the best thing to bond with your friends. You know?
Yeah.
Like, that's how I made all my friends.
Yeah. It was so funny. I was like not a party or not. I was just watching my stories.
Yeah, weed was always the great equalizer. It didn't matter what crew you were part of. If you were cool, man. If you liked to party,
I was not cool. It was, dude. I started smoking weed when I was like in my like mid 20s.
Oh, really?
I was like and it's so funny because I went to school with a bunch of potheads who would always offer me. I'd live with a rock band during my between my sophomore year.
What type of rock? Was it prog rock, ska?
I lived with Andreas's rock band.
What?
Our mutual friend Andreas's rock band.
Yeah. What do they call Fools Rush In?
Fools Rush In.
Uh-huh.
And,
is that ska?
No.
They had a ska vibe.
They had some ska vibe to some of their songs.
You know, speaking of ska, Bowling for Soup has a song called 1985.
Mm.
First, Springsteen, yeah. Madonna, mm-hmm. way before Nirvana, there was you.
That was a huge hit.
Yeah, that was a great song.
It's the first thing that comes up when you Wikipedia, when you Google 1985.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah. So 1985, I was 7, and then later on, I was still not smoking weed.
I smoked weed. I was smoking in high school, like freshman year, out of an apple. I burnt my nose. I had to make up a lie to my aunt about what that was about.
I was just like an indoor kid watching my stories, like an old lady.
Right.
Like, and then in college, I was just like, it's not for me, man. I'm going to leave the grass alone, bro. And then one day, just like, this is how everything happens with like idiot guys. I was in like a parking lot in Camden Yards in Baltimore on some like weekend trip with my buddies. And this like pretty girl was like, want to smoke weed? And I was like, sure.
That is.
Just a pretty girl says, yes.
Years of friends. Years of my best friends is offering me in the safety of our home.
This random chick.
No, thank you. No, thanks. Pretty girl, sure.
Yes.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Dude, George Gordon has a really funny joke about that where it's just like, whatever. Hey, whatever you're into. Like, you know, he's like, oh, you're into heroin? Okay. Like, I'm paraphrasing it, but it's definitely like every dumb thing that we do is because a hot girl is like, yes, this is what I'm into.
You're Jehovah's Witness? Me too.
And I converted for like 6 years. I knocked on so many doors.
I went to Berkeley, so there I smoked a lot of weed. There was like
two-story
bongs.
It's required.
Yeah, it is required. I had a bong with an ice catcher. It was, yeah. Now it gives me a lot of anxiety, so I don't anymore.
There you go.
I went on the opposite path of you.
You got on the safe and narrow.
The safe and narrow, yes. That's right.
Well, the straight and narrow.
Yes.
also that.
Yeah, but they do a lot of stuff that I found reckless. You know, he's smoking. John Bender, that's Judd Hirsch's Nelson's character.
Yep.
Judd Nelson's character is smoking in there, lighting his shoe on fire, giving them all weed to smoke. And they don't go outside. They don't find a place that's well ventilated. Smoking
wild.
Indoors.
Also, I mean, what do they have to lose? They're
homeboy
kids.
Is just like destroying books the whole movie.
Yeah.
Like what kind of message? Like, it's like a weird sub message. Like education is the enemy. He's just like tearing up Sartre, like not books and shit.
I know.
I mean, the janitor is kind of the reason why they all got high, because the janitor was like, I look in your lockers.
Oh, yeah.
And Judd Nelson's like, oh, shit. Mm-hmm. I got to go get my weed. And that's why that's what starts it all.
Yeah, what a wise janitor. I like that character as well. And at first, I didn't realize why he was being nice. There's some very subtle writing because he's very nice to Anthony Michael Hall's character.
He's his dad, right?
That's what they ask. Yeah, I didn't know your dad was the janitor. And but then you realize it's because he probably found the flare gun in his locker. And he's like
concerned.
Yeah, he's like,
are you okay?
Yeah, don't pick on the suicidal boy. Or the boy with the gun. If they made this movie today, that boy wouldn't be shooting himself. Uh-huh. He'd be taking out everybody.
Everybody.
And but he is he's a cool character who it lets you know that the janitor is actually the central nervous system of the school. They know everybody and everything.
And then he's so paranoid of janitors, man. I was like, these guys, they got ears everywhere. You gotta watch out for them.
Yeah, when I worked in schools, the secretary was the most important person, school secretary. You know, she if she knew you and liked you and you were going to be a minute late, maybe you weren't going to be written down for being a minute late. You know, if you needed more supplies, you could talk to her.
And that's how you learn to sweet talk the secretary.
Oh,
it's like, oh, you got a nice blouse there, Miss Johnson.
That's those right. New glasses.
Yeah.
I like the red.
Oh, Gabriel, you're such a flirt. Yeah. You stop it.
Yeah.
This whole thing.
You have a good weekend.
It takes hit from EpiPen.
I made cupcakes. Here, pick your two favorite ones. All right. And he's cool. Also, in contrast and in conflict with the disciplinarian. I don't know what we would call the main adult. He wasn't the principal.
He was. He was the principal.
I thought he was. You know, I don't think they ever referred to him as principal. I think if I had to guess, he would be the vice principal, because the vice principal is usually in charge of discipline.
Oh,
and you also have a dean of as well, who's often not the principal. So yeah, exactly.
I make $31,000 a year. Yeah. That's pretty low for a principal. Even
that's what I thought. Yeah. I thought maybe I just didn't know what inflation
maybe
was.
Maybe we're just really, really not up on our inflationary
but
charts.
Then the janitor asked him for $50, and I'm like, okay, well, if he's asking him for $50 in order to keep this secret, it must be like sort of similar, unless if he's asking him for a lot of money.
That was some nice maneuvering right there.
Yeah, that was
good extortion. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Mm-hmm. So, what were your favorite? What was a favorite scene?
The reenactment when Judd Nelson reenacts what he thinks
Ryan's
family life is like. Hi, Dad. Hi, son. And then later on, we find
it's like
great foreshadowing, because later on we find out it's the complete opposite. Like, this guy is like suicidal. Which is really a good way to set that up.
Yeah, I like all the act outs of the parents. Those are really fun. They all, I mean, Emilio Estevez does it too. He like acts out his own family. And Judd Nelson, I guess they're the only ones who really act out their family.
I found both of those things very unchill and unsettling for me.
Yeah, you hated it.
I did. I hated it. Like, I just imagine if I was with my friends and we're having like a bonding therapy weed smoking sesh, if any one of you just got possessed by your dad right now and started acting out the abusive relationship, I'd be like, hard pass. I gotta go.
I liked the freak. I liked her like pathological liar.
Oh my god, so funny.
The writing for that scene is so good.
So funny.
It's so good. What did he do when you told your therapist? He banged me. What did she say? She says something along those lines, and you're like, what?
Ew. He banged you? Yeah, multiple times.
Ew.
And was he was married? You bet.
Like, it's also pretty great when they do like the makeover. The makeover is awesome.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, don't touch it down here.
Okay.
Yeah. Say that again.
The makeover, Ally Sheedy's makeover, when they're like getting her all prettied up for Emilio Estevez.
Don't poke that thing in my eye.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
And then she's like, you're a lot prettier without all that black stuff. I like all that black stuff.
Because again, like, it's just one of my favorite things, one of my favorite tropes in movies, like the pretty girl who's actually pretty the whole time, which is the best.
I love it too. And it's also interesting to me that they had her character wearing makeup before. It was like, not that she was suddenly wearing makeup, it was that she was just changing the type of makeup that she wore in order to make her pretty.
No black makeup. Nobody wants to see black makeup around your eyes.
Not in the early 80s.
You look like a coal miner.
Yeah.
We want pink. We want glitter.
Mm-hmm. We can't remind people of their hard scrabble lives in the coal mine.
Put on this. You need a pink blouse. You need to look like a strawberry flavored Starburst.
Yeah, she does look like strawberry shortcake after she does the makeover. It's very like, very My Little Pony look.
Mm-hmm. Wholesome, clean, ready for church.
The whole opening sequence is also just great. Just like from the time they're getting dropped off, and then just their kind of introduction to each other is fantastic. All the tension there is great.
Scottish synth pop, Don't You Forget About Me by Simple Minds. You know, this a good Scottish pop
song.
Was that song.
A hit before that or because of that movie?
I think it's because of it.
Because of it. There, when the dork gets out of his car and his mom's like, is this going to be the first or the last time we do this? And you're like, you can just, the disappointment is just palpable. You're like,
and she's like,
oh,
you better find a way to study.
Yeah, exactly that.
And his sister's like, yeah.
He's like, I don't think we're supposed to study. I think we're just supposed to sit there.
His sister's evil. She's like, yeah, you better study.
Yeah, I think if they remade this movie, he'd have to be like an Asian or Indian boy with a tiger mom.
Yeah, there's no diversity in this movie.
That's right.
They wouldn't make this movie today. Not with like those characters, no.
No. And also, just to have a character who's like has to study so hard and hit the books, you know. So there's him. That's his introduction. Then Emilio's introduction with his working class pop.
Working class pops.
Yeah.
He's like, it's not that you messed around. Like I messed around. I messed around too, but you got caught.
Yeah,
important
that's
lesson.
Cool.
Don't get caught, kids. Do dirt. Don't get caught.
I know. I feel like that's a valuable lesson my mom taught me. I remember I'd ask to go out. I'd be like, "Hey, can I sleep over at my friend's house?" She's like, "What are you guys gonna do?" And I was like, "I don't know. Like, you know, nobody's there." And she was like, "I need you to go back upstairs right now, Gabe. And you're gonna come back down in 10 minutes. And you're gonna give me a much better lie."
Yeah.
You got
tell
that?
Tell me a story. What do you do?
The entire.
We're just gonna hang out.
The entire like voiceover of the letter that they finally wrote at the end is fantastic. Like that's a really, really good way to end a movie and a really good letter. It was dope.
Yeah. And then it was a poetic. And it ends with the fist in the air. They're all friends. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
What do you think happens after the movie? Do they actually acknowledge each other? Like they had the big argument about it. Are they actually still friends?
I always wanted them to do a spinoff, like another movie to explore that. Because like there was two couples then.
Yep.
They and weren't the poor really suicidal boy was still alone.
They weren't really into doing that back then. That's the sad part. Like, today they definitely are doing a follow-up. Either like a Netflix series or something. Mm-hmm. But I always wondered, like, what happened to those people?
Well, I wonder that Ali Sheedy and Emilio Estevez, they date for a couple days. At least, you know, until their parents get really upset that they're making out in front of them all the time, which is what happens at the end of the film. They make out on her car hood, basically.
That's okay. It's on her car hood. Her parents ignore her. They don't even notice.
Judd Nelson and Molly Ringwald last 1 week.
They are doing it purposefully to make her parents mad.
Definitely gets her pregnant. And eventually... pretty much her parents are like, well, we're going to pay this guy a lot of money to never see you again.
To disappear.
And he takes it.
And then she has her kid and they say it's theirs and she has a lot younger sister.
Also, somebody needs to call Child Protective Services on Judd Nelson's family.
We see his freaking cigar burn on his arm in the first like 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, so that's traumatic. You know, some of these people need therapy.
That's like more 70s than it is 80s.
But I feel like back then there was a lot more of this like, well, that's their business. That's in their house. Like there wasn't like this spirit of like, we have to protect children. Abuse is wrong. It was more like, oh, let them handle that in their house. Their rules, their house kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, there are conservative family values. We're not going to deal with this.
The way it should be. I'm kidding.
It was the 80s.
Mm-hmm. And, that brings us to time. Times have changed. Times have changed. There's a lot of problematic stuff in this movie. You know, I love Emilio, but we brought up earlier. Well, we didn't bring it up earlier, but yesterday Amber brought up that he drops the F-bomb for no good reason.
He does. It's also on Judd Nelson's locker.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're seeing.
And nobody says boo about it. Nobody's like, seems bothered even.
A lot of casual homophobia.
It's one of those things, though. I remember, I mean, just being a kid from being the age I am, me and my friends would just say it all the time. And then it was one of those deals where we didn't even realize how messed up it was because it was so common. And I don't even remember when it changed, but at some point we just like kind of clicked off and we just were like, nah, it's not something you should say anymore.
Yeah. Kids were never saying it when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. Not that word. They said gay. a lot, but and that slowly like fell off too, but that word was always like,
you know what's also funny, I was thinking about this, so many of like the classic comedy TV shows and movies, even from like relatively recently, have it set up where like a lot of the punchlines are, oh, because he's gay. Mm-hmm. Like on if you watch Friends on Netflix, like so many of the jokes are just like, get it? He's gay. Chandler's dad is weird because he's kind of gay. Like this, and even like what do you call it? The Hangover and like all the, that kind of cruise movies. It's like, this is wild. This wasn't that long ago.
No.
Right? Yeah. Well, in 85, AIDS was still a huge thing. Mm-hmm. And that was creating a big paranoia.
Yep.
And so I think that if that set like gay people back or the LGBT community back from its like emergence in the set like 70s as being a celebrated thing to then have contracting it to like what, because so many people were dying and everybody was scared that well, that allowed for like AIDS the hate first speech to come back.
Yeah. It was called gay related disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they started doing more research on it. And then it was a gay men's health crisis. Mm-hmm. So like, there's a lot of like, there's a lot of things going in that direction.
And so
that
makes sense. If you were born in the 80s and you were born during Reagan's like Republican family values pop culture era, then like of course this is a slur that would have been like mainstream accepted, if not applauded by the adults in power.
Sure.
So, you know, that's why that's why all of our friends were saying it.
You know,
without knowing what you know how bad it was.
What else is problematic in the movie? I'm trying to figure out.
I mean, it's just a very white movie. That's a problem. It would not be made today.
Well, John Hughes is so interesting. I like John Hughes' movies, but the more I watch them, the more I'm like, oh, that's kind of messed up. Like if you watch like 16 Candles, there's a character who's just like an Asian like minstrel, Long Duk Dong. I'm like, this is nuts. This would be over the top for back then.
Yeah. Well, I think he's also looking at a very privileged part of Chicago.
Sure.
So these neighborhoods out in Chicagoland are probably still very, very white and affluent and segregated for that sake.
And then the other thing that's kind of problematic is Molly Ringwald's attraction to this man that's he bullies her. He's like so mean to her, like, and then she goes and finds him. Yeah,
teenage girls love bad boys. I mean, you're just finding the worst possible guy for you, especially if it's the guy who pissed off your dad. Oh my god, how many times have we seen that? That's some real stuff.
He talks to you like he's real. Like he's not. It's like he's not phony like all my friends, who, mm-hmm. you know, and he's like not like a pushover like my dad and mom. He's like, wow, he really sees me.
That's one of the dynamics in the movie that actually rang true to me. I was like, yeah, this would happen. Like the rich girl who's like a little bit sheltered, but then this bad boy who's very handsome shows interest and treats her bad and is kind of negging. Oh, my God.
That was the thing, though, the negging. Yeah. I was like, oh, but God, you're going to fall for that negging, Molly. Like, don't be so basic. Why are you?
Mostly works on like young idiots. Like, we don't know anything until we know something.
That's right. And now everybody knows what negging is because of the internet. So now it just doesn't work at all.
And because of mystery.
Exactly.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. It's because of the pickup artist.
Yeah. If he hadn't published his playbook, he wouldn't have ruined negging for the rest of the world.
One of the greatest characters in pop history. I mean, what is this guy doing?
He's mystery.
Got goggles on his forehead.
I know. Oh. And like a Dr. Seuss hat.
His crazy little wacky facial hair.
Yeah. Dude, he looks like a character out of The Mighty Boosh. He looks like somebody they would have made up if he didn't exist. So I don't know if that you think it's a tale as old as time. That's cool. I do think that it is of its moment, where I thought that her character in the movie, Molly Ringwald's character Claire, does an admirable job of like putting up with a lot of being ganged up on and picked on without snapping.
She stands strong. Yeah.
You know, because all three of the guys, they'll like team up on her together whenever Judd Nelson would lead the charge.
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, Ally Sheedy was leading the charge when she was telling her lie. And then were like, all like, well, you never answered the question. Are you a virgin or not? Mm-hmm. And she's like crying at that point. So
I liked in within that same scene, I loved Emilio Estevez's confession of being a bully and taping that guy's butt cheeks, because oh. it was such a great writing and monologue to give sympathy for the bully. Because because at first they laugh and then you're like, oh, this is serious. Oh, you're an asshole. Oh, okay. Like
so many streaks of a very special episode yes. run through this movie, and that's definitely one of the biggest moments too. It's like we have a very special moment in this very special movie.
Yeah,
they have lessons about bullying. They have lessons about abuse.
Suicide.
They have lessons about suicide. Yeah. They have lessons about. Well, the lesson about drug use doesn't really come through. I mean, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it just sounds like...
It's cool.
If you miss drugs, are cool, baby. Yeah.
If you can't afford
don't
therapy...
Don't be a dork. Smoke weed.
Yeah. It's a social lubricant for a bunch of oddballs.
Brings people together.
Yeah. So that's times have changed, man. And then the other times have changed moment is they pick on the janitor a little bit.
There's some big classism going
on. There is classism.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, this guy is beneath us because he's a janitor and we're a bunch of rich assholes. That's
yeah.
telling how it is.
Yeah, but I was confused by that. Like, what is Judd Nelson's character's socioeconomic?
Well, he's just a dick.
Like, what?
You know what's funny, though? Because he's in the suburbs. So it might be one of those things where it's like, so I live in this neighborhood. But I'm not a janitor, so yeah. I'm at least above you. It's one of those kind of deals.
Yeah.
So and also in those neighborhoods, you still need a plumber. And I think that his dad feels like the way that he talks about
in the
about
wrong
his
side
dad,
of the tracks, even in a good neighborhood, you'll have like the kind of not as good part.
Yeah, and that's an 80s trope too that we see in other John Hughes movies is like the bad boy from the wrong side of the tracks.
Oh, I forgot one line that Brian had that I really, really liked is... when they find his fake ID. Mm. And he's like, why do you need a fake ID? So I can vote. I was like, yes.
Was
oh, my
one.
God, you kill me. That's
the coolest reason.
It's the best reason to have a fake ID. And he made himself like 72. It's great.
Yeah, I like it when people break the rules.
It's nice
to
precursor
be virtuous.
To loving.
Yeah, if they made this movie today, I was thinking that there would have to be a cutter. There'd have to be... a trans child.
There would be.
There'd be a talk about bulimia and body dysmorphia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was no body shaming going
well, this
on.
Is just
and that's
like,
definitely something that
like,
you tell listen about.
This is just like old Euphoria.
Yes.
Like Euphoria. It's like Euphoria is like this movie on steroids, basically.
Yes.
It's like we're gonna put some trans people in here. We're gonna have some hard drug use. We're gonna have some
sex
some
workers,
sex work, and blackmail.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no cyberbullying. Like nobody pulls out their phone and just sees that they've gone viral for something they didn't want people to see. The apocalyptic environmental students would be in this. There'd definitely be some like Greta Thunberg fans with like a bleak outlook on the future.
Brian's character would definitely be on the spectrum for sure.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure. Yeah. We'd have to have talks about that.
This movie would suck. We need old movies like this. We need movies that were from a different time. They aren't correct in a lot of ways, but are still entertaining and kind of make us remember how there were things that were not right, but still funny.
You don't want to...
Because oftentimes, yeah. the funny thing is the thing that's not the right thing. And
that's
I think
right.
This movie kind of reminds you of that in a way.
Yeah, I mean it holds up. I think like my final thoughts on this are that it does hold up. I loved all of the acting in it, and I'd love to. I think it would be a great thing for schools to put on as like a play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a timeless play, and I think that those characters continue to exist today, even though they've Judd Nelson has morphed into the Edgelord, and you know
he looks really old.
Uh-huh.
Even he does.
Though, like the other, like Anthony Michael Hall looks so radically different. It's hard
now?
To even recognize him as the same person. But Judd Nelson looks very much the same person. He just looks like a very like straight-laced old version of the same person. Molly Ringwald looks amazing. Ally Sheedy looks amazing. I watched like their reunion.
Emilio Estevez looks like a different person too. Like
he looks like a bearded
old,
recluse.
But he's like, yeah.
Got that weird facial hair going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. I would give this. I think people should see it. Thank you for recommending it.
I thoroughly enjoyed watching it last night and this morning.
Yeah,
yeah.
I would give it. I think out of 10, I'd give it 7 Scottish pop ballads out of 10.
I, because of the nostalgia and like the personal connection that I have to it, I would say I'd give it 8 fingerless gloves out of 10.
I'm giving this movie 9 slurs.
Yeah.
9 slurs up, baby. Wow. 9 out of 10. Pretty good.
It's the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, thanks for listening to another episode of Eat, Pray, Judge. As always, I'm Gabe Pacheco, and you can find me at GabePacheco.com. I'd like to thank my 2 guests today. Khalid, where can everybody find you?
You find me at Khalid Says on Instagram, and you can check out my podcast, F'n Up. It's a podcast about manners, etiquette, and how we can all do better.
And Amber, where can people find you?
On Instagram, you can find me at Amber C. Rollo, AmberCrollo, or you can find where I'm joking around the city on my website, amberrollo.com.
All right, great. We'll be back next week with a new episode, and Sammy Hamarne will be back. We miss you, Sammy. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. That's how we get new fans. And if you like what you hear, spread the word and tell a friend. All right, thanks. We love you. Bye. Think of the tender things that we will